Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Avodah Zorah, Daf Mem Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar with our system, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn our attention to the upper quarter of Daf Mem Beis, you will notice a series of triangles. In fact, there's a numbering system that appears to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text between the Gemara and the Rashi. Our shiur will be beginning at triangle number 4. Being that this is a number 4, it's upon us to check out, to discover where were 1, 2, and 3. They were on Daf Mem Aleph Amid Beis. We're in the middle of a discussion that started over there, and the topic had been an idol, or the Gemara refers to it as Avodah Zorah Shenishtabru Me'alel, an idol that broke on its own. In other words, the Gentile, the idol worshipper, did not come and smash it. It just crumbled, it fell apart on its own, and we saw a machlokes Rabbi Yochanan and a Reish Lakish concerning the permissibility of those pieces, of that which remains. According to Rabbi Yochanan, an Avodah Zorah that broke on its own remains forbidden. In other words, since the idol worshipper did not formally smash it and declare it of no value, it retains its Avodah Zorah status and remains forbidden to benefit from. Rabbi Shimon Lovish, on the other hand, says that since it broke, the idol worshipper probably was mevatel it. Mevatel means voided it. Feeling that if it can't protect itself, how is it possibly going to be able to take care of me? The triangles have appeared in two different directions. With the point facing up, it represents a question on Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish was the lenient opinion, saying that once it breaks, it's okay. So, if we notice, and we will, only one more time, an inverted triangle with a triangle point facing downwards, that will be in question number 11 on Mem Beis Amid Beis. In the meantime, the questions that we will be posing, you will see, are consistently from 4 through 10, and you can see them by scanning down Daf Mem Beis Amid Aleph. All of these are questions on Reish Lakish. In other words, we'll be presenting sources. All of these questions are coming from Tanaic sources, where we see that even though it's broken, it seems to retain its original Isser, its prohibition. Let us continue now in the Gemara. Eisvei, Motso Tavnis Yad, Tavnis Regel. One found a form of a hand or a form of a foot. Notice, of course, this is a quote from the Mishnah that we had on Daf Mem Aleph Omed Aleph. And what does it say? Hare Elu Asurim. These forms are forbidden. Mitnei Shekayotze Boheneva, because things like this are worshipped. Amai, why should they be forbidden if Reish Lakish were correct? Ha Shvorim Ninu, are they not broken pieces and still they're usher? So we see a question on Reish Lakish who suggested permissibility. The Gemara answers, Ha Tirgum Shmuel. Shmuel already explained the Mishnah by saying that these forms, this hand and foot form, were Ba'oimdim al Basison. They were on a base, on a some sort of pedestal or base, which is an indication that they aren't just mere pieces of something that's broken, but rather they have their inherent, their own significance, and that therefore they are viewed as having been certainly worshipped. Esve. An idol worshipper can void his own idol and a fellow idol worshipper's idol, or someone else's idol. Rabbi Yisrael, a Jew, however, eino mevatel avodas kochavim shel ovei kochavim. A Jew cannot declare unworthy the idol of another idol worshipper. Amai, why is it that we don't take seriously the voiding of a Yisrael? Teheve, why not consider the bittul of Yisrael kavidis kachovim shenishtabro meila, as if it's an idol that broke on its own? Omar Abaye. Abaye answers, the case here is shepichaso. Rashi, shepichaso, hiko olel Yisrael bepatish, ad shenismacho, the Jew took a hammer and impacted this idol until it became flattened. However, nothing of the physical structure of this idol was depleted. Hilkoch lo botil. Since therefore it's not voided. In other words, we see that in order for a voiding to take place, something would have to be missing from it, break off from it. In this case, he altered its form, but the original content or original material remained intact. The Gemara asks, "V'chipichaso mayhavi?" So even if that's what he did, if he was he simply smashed it, but it didn't come apart. So what? Why is it not botel? Why is it not voided? V'hotanan, we have a Tanaic source that says pichaso apisha lo chasera betela. That if this process or this action is done called pichaso, even if it doesn't diminish the content of the idol itself, it still is voided. The Gemara answers, Hani Mili, this is the first of a couple answers, and hence we have a number one. This idea that it's betela, that it's voided, depichaso evi kechovim, that's if an idol worshipper himself did that action. Avol pichaso Yisrael lo betela, if a Jew did it, it is not voided. Let's take a look at Rashi. Avol pichaso Yisrael loi, deloi domi lavarisuchovim shinishtabra mealeha. This case is not similar to the case of an Avodah Zorah that fell apart on its own. The Hossam Omar, in the case where it fell apart on its own, the Goy, the Gentile, will say, Ihi nafsho lo matzlo, it can't protect itself, so how's it going to protect me? Aval hocha, kosovar, here, in the case where a Jew did the pichasa, here, aval hocha, kosovar, ovi kechovim, lo kopta avodis kechovim apchisa. The Gentile is imagining in his mind that the idol isn't concerned, isn't upset with its being deformed. Hence, in the idol worshipper's mind, this action of pichasa that Israel did doesn't diminish the importance that is associated with idols, and hence it's not voided. The Rava Omar the Olam Piki Pichaso Yisronami Betela. Rava will tell you that if Meikar Hadin, from the basic letter of the law, if a Jew deforms it, even though it doesn't diminish from the content, but as we explained before, Pichaso is this action of causing it to be deformed. Even if a Jew does that, by letter of the law, it is Betela, it's voided, Ela. So why does the source say that if the Israel did it, it's not botel? Gezerah, there's a precautionary measure taken here by the rabbis that they declare it remains also remains forbidden. Why did they make this? Why did they take this precautionary measure? Dilma magbola. We're afraid that before the Jew deforms it, before he does the pichasa, the Jew would pick it up. The hodar mivatala, and then do the bittul, do the voiding, and that's already another problem. If the Jew picks it up beforehand, it then becomes a Jewish owned idol. Once again, by the Jew picking it up before any action of voiding, it becomes a Jewish owned idol. In other words, the action of hagbo is koine, acquires, and it's going to be acquired by the Jew. This is another rule, that an idol that's owned by a Jew never loses its forbidden status. Esve, we have another question on Reish Lakish, a source in which we'll see that something that's broken remains forbidden. Akum shehevi avonim min amarkalis, an idol worshipper that brought stones from the Markalis idol. The Markalis idol was a setup of stones whereby the worshippers would throw other stones, additional stones, at the original setup, at the original assembly of stones. In other words, it was served by a constant pelting by of stones. So eventually, in the course of time, the Markalis becomes a pile of stones, and that's the idol. So you have a Gentile that brought some stones from this Markalis idol, and he paved streets, let's just say. He paved streets and plazas with these stones. Mutaros. Those streets are allowed. V'Yisrael shehevi avonim in Amarkalus, v'chipo abohen drochim v'tartios. A Jew that would have done the same thing, brought stones from the Markalus and covered and paved streets with these stones. Asuros. They are forbidden. In other words, the Markalus status is not voided, even though the Jew removed the stones from that Markalus and used it for as road pavement. Amai, the question is why, according to this source, are the stones forbidden? In other words, if Reish Lakish is correct, Tehevei, let it be Kavodis Kochavim Shinishtabro Me'olel, like a statue, like an idol that broke on its own. Hocha, Nami. Here to Kidarova. We are going to say that by letter of the law, these stones and streets should be mutter, are allowed. However, we're afraid that the Jew didn't just roll the stones over. We're making a ruling of prohibition in anticipation of the Jew picking up the stones before using them as pavement material. Now, if the Jew picks up the stones, then he acquires it, and it becomes an avodah zarah shel Yisrael. And as we said before, an avodah zarah shel Yisrael is not botel. If we look at Rashi, he'll refine the precision of this explanation. Kidarova, dilmo magba lo lekula markalis bereisha. We're afraid that the Jew might pick up the entire markalis at first. V'hodar mevatel lei, and then cancel it or void it. V'sosro. And undo it. So we have a situation where, even though by letter of law, if the Jew removed the stones one by one from the original pile, that would be considered a voiding, because it would be no worse than avodah zarah shenishtabra me'olel. However, if the Jew picks up all of the stones that form the markalis before he uses it for paving, that's already a point of no return, because once he picks it up as a markalis, it becomes then a markalis of a Jew, and a markalis of a Jew would be something that has no longer can be voided. Therefore, even if he did it in a fashion where it would be voided, namely he removed it stone by stone, nevertheless we are not going to be lenient. We have a geometric form that we just encountered, a bow tie. This is explained on the side, the mivneh, the outside margin. Tshuva zu kidarova, this answer that's noted in the bow tie, kidarova, namely we're explaining a restriction as non-letter of the law, but as a fence, a gezeira, a precautionary prohibition, as opposed to a letter of the law prohibition. That's alluded to by the term kidarova, because that was the rule that Rava stated before, this idea of precautionary prohibition. So this answer, chayzeres arba pomim, will repeat itself four times as you scan down this page. Four more times you have, in truth we made mention of it before when we said that when Rava introduced his original point, he said Gezeira Dilma Magba, that we had squiggle underlined the Gezeira word a few lines up, and now we're seeing that answer that Rava gave before reused. We have it here in number as an answer to 6, and we have it as an answer to 7, as an answer to 8, and as an answer to 9. So four more times we have the Kidarova answer being used to explain questions on Reish Lakish, so we've decided to mark it off to give you this series feeling. One may ask, well, if the answer is so obvious, then why are these questions raised when you can so easily give that answer? Well, Tosfos is sensitive to that, and he leaves it as a question. There's a little text that says Hochanami Kidarova Tsorach Iun Bechol Hani. One has to investigate each one of these cases. The Kori Law, my Kori Law. The person asking the question, the Gemara was raising this question. What was his thinking? Pshita Delishni Bahu Kidarova. It would be obvious. It seems to be obvious that this answer could be given. So that's left unresolved. For our purposes, though, we'll just continue with the questions, and of course we already see the answer that's going to be given ahead of time. So we continue now with number 7, triangle number 7, Eisvei. Oivei kechavim, sheshipa avodas kechavim. An idol worshiper that chipped off, or sanded down an idol. So let's say he removed pieces. Sheshifa has to do with the shapshef, is to scrape down. For our purposes, he removed something from an idol. Litzorchoi, if he did it for his own purposes. In other words, he, let's say, took pieces of wood off an idol, a wooden idol, and he did it for his own purposes. Let's say he needed the pieces for his fireplace, for burning, for a bonfire. So we say he v'shipuyeh mutarin. We say that the original idol and the pieces that he removed from it are allowed. In other words, the idol loses its idolatrous status, becomes now an allowed piece of wood. Litzorcha, if he removed the piece of wood for beautification purposes, he wanted to improve the idol. He asura v'shipuyeh mutarin. The original idol remains forbidden, but the piece that he removed is allowed. V'Yisrael sheshipa avodas kechavim, a Jew who, however, who did the same thing, removed pieces from a statue, from an idol, bein litzorchoi, bein litzorcha, whether it be for his own personal needs or for beautification of the idol, he v'shipuyeh asurin. The original idol and the broken piece, the pieces he broke off, are forbidden. Well, amai, why should the pieces that the Jew broke off be forbidden? Teve kavodis kochavim shinishtabro me'alel. Let it be no worse than a case of an idol that falls apart on its own. And yet we see it's forbidden, and that would represent a kasha, a question on Reish Lakish's position of leniency. The Gemara answers, Hachanami kederava. Here too, it's a ruling of stringency only as a precautionary measure, that the Jew might pick up the original idol before he does any transformation or alteration. And being that the Jew picks it up initially, that makes it a Jewish-owned idol, and that has no further avoiding possibility. And therefore, if he removes pieces from it even without having picked it up, we rule stringently in anticipation of that case of his picking it up beforehand. Eisvei, another question. Rabbi Yossi Omer, here's a case of someone finding a metal idol. Rabbi Yossi Omer, shochek v'zore l'ruach omat liyam. One would grind it up and cast its pieces into the wind or throw it into the sea. Amrulo, the Rabbonon who disagreed with Rabbi Yossi, says, af hi nase zevel. Even if you do that, you pursue that method of obliteration, there still will be benefit received, and one is forbidden to benefit from idols. Uksiv lo yidbak biyadcha me'umo min acherim. There shall cleave unto your hands nothing from the idols. Therefore, the Rabbonin who disagree with Rabbi Yossi say the only solution to these things, to found idols, is to bury them. So the Gemara asks, why is it though that the Chachamim have to forbid the pieces? What happened here? The idol, the fellow who found the idol, ground it up. Tehevei, let it be kavodis kachamim shenishtabra me'aleha. Let it be like an idol that fell apart on its own. the Chachomim who said that it becomes Eva, we have to explain that the ground up pieces that are scattered into the wind, though wherever they fall, they can serve as fertilizing material, and that would be considered benefit. But we are asking, why are the Rabbanon so stringent? Once it was ground up, is it no worse than a case of an avodas kochavim, an idol that broke on its own? And Reish Lakish said that that would be allowed. And here we have something that remains forbidden, according to the Chachamim. The Gemara answers, Hachanami Kidarava. We apply the same reasoning as we said above, that by letter of the law, it really is permissible, because it is considered like an avodas kochavim shenishtabra me'aleh. However, we rule stringently, because in anticipation of a case where the Jew would have picked it off the ground before grinding it up, and that would make it like an avodas kochavim shel Yisrael, which has no further voiding. Eisvei, Rabbi Yossi ben Yassian Omer, Motza tsuras drakon v'roshe chotuch. A person found a drakon image. It's a type of creature that some may want to translate into a dragon form. The Meforshim say it's a snake-like creature. Here it's, of course, not something living. It's a form, and its head has been decapitated. Sofek oivik kichavim chotchoi, sofek Yisrael chotchoi, mutter. If there's any matter of doubt concerning this form, who was responsible for its decapitation, whether maybe a Gentile did it, or maybe a Jew did it. If a Gentile had done it, it would constitute a voiding. If a Jew did it, it would not be a voiding. Nevertheless, mutter. Rashi explains that we have here, the reason we're allowing this is because we have a sfeik, or there's a double doubt here. The first level of doubt is, this true tsuras drakon maybe was just decorative, it wasn't worshipped ever. And even if it was worshipped, that doesn't mean this decapitated form is forbidden, because maybe a Gentile did the decapitation. So you have a double sfeik. As we said, just to repeat that, it maybe was originally never worshipped, so that would be okay. And even if it was worshipped, maybe it was voided by virtue of a Gentile having done the decapitation. Therefore, we can rule it is allowed. However, more importantly for us, Vada Yisrael Chotcho, if a Jew is the one responsible for its decapitation, Usur, it is forbidden. This broken drakon image is forbidden. Well, we'll ask Amai, why are you forbidding it? Why should it be no worse than the case of Avodas Kochavim, an idol that broke on its own, which Reish Lakish rules is allowed? The Gemara answers, Hochanami Kedarava. Here too, we are prohibiting it simply as a precautionary measure, but even though by letter of the law it would have been allowed, like Reish Lakish ruled. Eisvei, we have another Tanaic source. This has to do, the background to this is a case of someone planting vegetables under an Asherah tree, under an idolatrous tree. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Af lo yirokos b'mois hagshamim. One is not allowed to plant vegetables under it during the winter season, even though, as far as the shade value is concerned, that actually serves to injure the plant, so one is not really benefiting from the shade aspect of the tree. However, one still does benefit from it. The foliage that falls from the tree, from this idolatrous tree, turns into fertilizer for the plants that you planted underneath it, even though the shade aspect might not be beneficial, but there is still benefit being received from the tree, the fertilizing factor. Well, why is that a problem, though? According to Reish Lakish, Amai, why does the Nevi'ah, why does the falling foliage present a problem? Why not consider it like an idol that broke on its own? So if you have a good imagination, the falling of the leaves is like the breaking of the idol. In this case, we're talking about an Asherah tree, an idolatrous tree. The Gemara answers, Shiny Hossam, the case featuring the foliage falling is different. The Iker of Avodas Kochavim Kayemes, the basic idol remains even after the leaves fall off. And therefore, it's also, it's forbidden. Once again, since the tree remains intact and the tree is not voided, Therefore, the foliage that falls off from it is also forbidden. The Gemara asks, but what about the case we saw before, earlier, the ha shipuyan, the case where a person was taking pieces off of an idol, sanding it down, chipping it off, the ikur avodas kohen kamis, where in that case the original statue, the original idol, remained intact, the kotoni, and it said there, we have an arrow indicating to look at Omid Aleph, where this quote is coming from, and it said there, Litzorcha, if he was doing it for beautifying the original idol, he asura the shipuyel mutaren. That's in the case where the idol worshiper did the chipping. The ruling there was that the shipuyin are mutter. So even though the original idol remains intact, the broken pieces are allowed. That's what we said in the source on Amud Aleph. So why is the foliage falling from the tree usur? Is the foliage any different than the pieces removed from the idol, which we ruled were allowed? Omar Rav Huna Braid Rav Yeshua. He explains why the tree is different. Since this is the normal growth of a tree, as a tree develops, it sheds its foliage every season. That's called derech gedilosa. That doesn't constitute any form of voiding, of bittul, as opposed to a case where pieces were removed from something that otherwise would have remained forever. When someone chips off a piece from an original idol, there, that's not called derech gedilos, and therefore those pieces are voided. Eisvei, Rav Shimon Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan. Here, the Gemara doesn't just present it as Eisvei, but incorporates the names as well. Here, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Rish Lakish, is asking on Rabbi Yochanan. What we will see here is a source of something being, of an idol breaking. We're speaking, of course, in very general terms until we learn the source itself, but the bottom line is we're going to see a ruling of leniency regarding the breaking of the idol, and that would constitute a kasha on Rav Yochanan, and hence you see the triangle has been inverted. We also have attached to this a long question mark, and you can see to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text a kuf that's encircled with a vertical dashed line. Eisvei Rav Shimon ben Lakish l'Rabbi Yochanan. Kain Shibarosh Ho'ilan. A nest, a bird's nest that's on the top of a tree. What kind of tree? So Shel Hekdish. Hekdish here is a reference to something that was dedicated, a tree that was dedicated to the Beis Hamikdash. For our purposes, this isn't the main thrust of the sukkia. Things that have been sanctified to the Beis Hamikdash, even though it will resurface as the Gemara goes on later. But for the time being, we can de-emphasize this Aleph part of the source, that deals with the Beis Hamikdash dedicated tree. So we say that a few found a bird's nest, a nest at the top of such a tree, lo nanin v'loy moyalin. This expression shows that the prohibition of the bird's nest is not a Torah prohibition. It's a rabbinic ruling. The rabbinic ruling states one is not allowed to benefit from it on a rabbinic level, even though from a Torah level, that means from a letter of the law level, it really is allowed. From a rabbinic level, it's not allowed. However, if one does go ahead and benefit from this nest, from this bird's nest on the top of a hektish tree, a sanctified tree, lomol, it means he's not transgressing the Torah prohibition of me'ila. That's the Torah prohibition of benefiting, of personal benefit from sanctified items. However, b'roisha shel ashera, yakiz bekon, if one finds a bird's nest on the top of idolatrous tree, an ashera tree, one, it says here, yatiz bekona, which means he throws up a stick at this bird's nest, and once the bird nest falls, he can benefit from it. Let's take a look at the Rashi. It says, yatiz bekona, four lines from the top, yashlich atzei hakein b'makel min ho'ilon. He can cast off the the nest through the use of a stick, v'srafein, and then use it for fuel. V'ena mehem, and benefit from it. However, v'lo yala asher v'yitlein, we don't want the person, we're forbidding the person from climbing up the asherah tree itself. D'im kein, if he does climb onto the tree, nimtza mishtamish v'asherah b'mokom sulam, he's in fact using the tree in place of a ladder. V'zu hi hano mimenu, this constitutes benefit from the tree, min ho'asherah, which is, that's not allowed. So we're telling him, don't climb up the tree, but throw a stick up and then knock the bird's nest off and use it as fuel. Now, this is an assumption made in order to develop the question that the bird's nest was made by the bird breaking off twigs from the Asherah tree itself. And the source says, go ahead, use it, knock it off with the, throw up a stick, get the nest down. The nest was made from the Asherah tree itself, and you're allowed to benefit from it. That would show, like Reish Lakish, that an Avodah Zorah sh'nishtabra me'aleha, an Avodah Zorah that broke on its own, is allowed to benefit from it. And that, of course, is a difficulty to Rabbi Yochanan's position. We see a new geometric form, a little house marking, on the outside margin under the Mivneh, the structural note. You see a house featured, and we've written in two tshuvos letoivas Rabbi Yochanan, two answers in defense of Rabbi Yochanan's position. One is over here, and you have to scan down a few lines later, and we do this often, in the space to the immediate side of the Gemara text, you'll see numbering. That makes it easier to find where the next one appears, and you can see number 2 with Rabbi Avo, also in the text itself being featured with this marking. So the Gemara answers, Hocha b'mayaskinan, here, what are we dealing with? Kagoyin di icy eitzim me'almo v'kinsa bohen. The bird brought sticks, twigs from other trees, from non-idolatrous trees, and made the nest on the idolatrous tree. Therefore, the nest is totally allowed. Its origin is not from an idolatrous tree. Daikonami, bear in mind, or just by looking at the markings, we're now going to start a long point. We've called it daikonami. Daikonami means through careful reading, one can see that this must be the explanation. And this will take a few lines to develop, and we've indicated this with a long marking. To the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara, we've written in daikonami. Daiko means by careful, by being medayik, careful reading. Also, one can see this point. And as we said, it takes a few lines to develop, as our long mark indicates. All of the lines of the Gemara that are parallel or opposite this vertical dash line are part of this singular point. So the Gemara says, the idea that the tree, that the twigs for the nest came from an outside source, a non-idolatrous source, can be proven by careful reading. The Katoni Gabi Hegdish, because it teaches in the same source. By Hegdish, if you just glance up a few lines into the framed section, there was an Aleph, the Hegdish tree, the sanctified tree. Now we're going to bring that into the discussion where we de-emphasized it before. The Hegdish tree, what did it say there? It said, lo nehnin v'lo mo'alin, which we explain meant that by letter of the law, it's allowed that the nest made in the on top of the Hegdish tree is by letter of law allowed. If you say very well that it brought the wood from outside, with that we understand that it teaches with regard to the Hegdish tree, the sanctified tree, which means, here we have a colon indicating that we first cited the quote, and now the explanation follows. One is not allowed to benefit. That's mida rabbona, meaning on a rabbinic level, a stringency imposed by the rabbis, which, as we mentioned before, from the Torah standpoint, one could benefit from it. But the lo nenin is midarabonin, the lo moyalin equals midaraisa. So that means that one, if one does benefit from it, he's not in violation of a Torah law. The ha lo kadishi. The nest was never sanctified. The nest came from wood, from an outside source. And being that we're explaining the Hektish case, or in other words, we have to explain the Hegdish case as coming as wood coming from an outside source. Therefore, the Asherah section of the source, the bay section of that same Tanaic source, would also be explained as wood coming from an outside tree, a non-idolatrous tree. And this is how Rabbi Yochanan explains that source. Eloi Amris, but if you're going to explain the source, Sheshavra Eitzemi Menu V'Kinsabahen, that the bird broke twigs off the tree itself and made the nest, well, Amai Loi Malin, why would the source say in the case of the Hegdish tree that there's no Me'ilah violation? Ha Kadishi, they are sanctified. So at this point in the Gemara, it's much more comfortable for us to say, or to explain it as talking about wood coming from an outside source, in the case of the Hegdish, non-Hegdish wood, non-sanctified wood, in the case of the Asherah, which is important for our discussion, non-idolatrous twigs. The Gemara here rejects this support. Midi Yirya, who says that we have to be speaking about wood from an outside source? We can explain the source as talking about wood that came from the tree itself. Hacha begidulin haboyin liachar mikan askinan. Here we're talking about twigs that grew after the tree was sanctified. So we had a fully grown tree that was sanctified, dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash, and let us just say that it was sanctified at Aleph Nisan. The sanctification covers that which exists at Aleph Nisan. What about twigs that grow after Aleph Nisan? Those twigs are not sanctified. That's called gidulin, growth, haboyin l'achar mikan, that comes, that is produced after the sanctification. Askino means we are dealing with this. The kosovar, and the Tana here, is of the author of this Tanaic source, is of the opinion, ein me'ila b'gidulin. There is no violation of me'ila, of benefiting from Hegdish, from that which grows after the sanctification point in time. Now, what about the Asherah? The Asherah likewise was talking about wood that came from the tree itself. And what does it say? It says, Yatiz Bekona. It says, you can knock it off. You can knock off the wood that came from, that forms the nest, that came from the Asherah tree itself. Well, that's like Reish Lakish. So at this point, we don't necessarily see a successful defense on the part of Rabbi Yochanan, because the source can be explained also like Reish Lakish. Continuing in the Gemara, Rabbi Avo, Omer Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Avo has an approach, and naturally, or we should say appropriately, he is quoting Rabbi Yochanan. Ma yatiz, this idea of knocking the nest off. Yatiz be'efroichim. That has to do with knocking the nest off the tree in order to benefit from the chicks that are growing in the nest. However, the nest wood itself is forbidden. That's, of course, Rabbi Yochanan's position. Omale Rabbi Yankiv, the Rabbi Yirmiya Bar Tachlifa. Asbar Olach means I'm going to explain, Rabbi Yankiv says, I'm going to explain the Mishnah according to Rabbi Yochanan. In other words, we're going to provide additional halachic details with regard to this Tanaic source of the concerning the nest on the top of an Asherah tree, featuring some details according to Rabbi Yochanan's approach. Be'efroichim, when it comes to the use of the chicks in the nest. In that source we spoke about a nest in a Hegdish tree and a nest in an Asherah tree. And according to Rabbi Yochanan, we're talking about nests that were made from the wood of the trees themselves. So when you're looking at the birds, the efroichim, the chicks that are developing, that are growing in the tree, kan v'kan mutarin, whether it be the Hegdish tree or the Asherah tree, the chicks, assuming they have their own flying capacity, they don't need to be on the tree. They're there for right now, but they could actually survive without the tree. Those kind of chicks are mutar. But beitzim, kan v'kan asurin, eggs that are developing, that have been laid, are currently in egg. They haven't hatched yet. You're dealing with eggs that are in nests on these trees, the Hegdish tree and the Asherah tree. those eggs need the tree. That's where they are developing. They can't exist on their own right now. So those eggs are forbidden. Let us mention that the Rabbonim may impose a rabbinic restriction regarding the eggs, even though the eggs are not the wood. The wood itself is Ikur Hadin, is letter of the law. But the eggs are ruled prohibited as a gzerah, as a ruling of precautionary ruling, that so that you don't come to benefit from the tree itself. Omar Ravashi, v'froichem shetzrichen le'imon, if you have chicks that are still, they need the mother bird, they can't survive on their own, kebeitz adomu, then we will treat them with stringency and forbid them like we would eggs. The Mishnah. Hamotzi, kelim, valeim, tsuras, chamot, tsuras, levona, tsuras, drakon. A person found vessels, and carved onto these vessels were the form of a chama, a sun, or a levona, a moon, or a dragon. Yolichom liyama melach. Bring these forms to the Dead Sea, to the Salt Sea. In other words, if these forms are on metallic vessels, the only solution for them is put them in the salt sea where they will decay and no one will ever benefit from them. The Rashi points out that this source, this Mishnah, is according to the Shitas Rabbonan that we saw before on the Afmem Omid Beis, that said all other statues are mutter. That generally speaking, statues are not forbidden. In other words, the Rabbonim who disagreed with Rabbi Meir had ruled that all statues are forbidden because of Xera unto the statues that were worshipped in his location. But the Rabbonim took a lenient approach. They didn't go there. They didn't make a ruling concerning the majority simply because a minority happened to be worshipped. So those Rabbonim, however, when it comes to these particular forms, are strict, and the Gemara will have to deal with that. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel explains that forms that are sha'al ha-mechubodim asurim, on vessels that are honorable. This expression will also be dealt with by the Gemara. However, sha'al ha-mevuzim, sha'al ha-mechubodim, if they're on honorable type vessels, they are forbidden. Then those are usur. However, sha'al ha-mevuzim, if they're found on non-honorable honored vessels, then mutarin. Then it's a sign that they're not worshipped. Let us glance at the side of the Gemara, the outside margin. We have a nosei, a topic heading. Tsuros misuyamos al-kelim. Different forms on vessels have a simen shenevdu velo l'shem noi ba'alma, sign that they were worshipped, and they're not just decorative. The Gemara itself opens up with a long question. You can see the kuf that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a vertical dashed line indicating the length of this question. It says, Gemara asks, l'meimro de lahani hu de palchi lehu l'midi achrina lo. Are you suggesting that these forms are worshipped and other forms are not worshipped? Ve'romini, let us raise a contradiction. We have a source that comes from Maseches Chulin that deals with someone who is slaughtering an animal, and he has certain things in mind which he verbalizes while he is slaughtering. Hashochet l'shum horim l'shum gvois. L'shum yamim, l'shum nahorois, l'shum midbar, l'shum chamo, l'shum levono, l'shum koychovim umazolois, l'shum michoel sar hagodol, l'shum shilshul koton, harei elu zivchei mesim. We read a whole list of things, and we didn't explain them initially. But there's a whole list of things that's a much longer list than the items enumerated in the Mishnah. And we see that if someone slaughters with these things in mind, the result is they're called zivchei mesim. Zivchei mesim is a term used for something slaughtered and offered to an idol. So if we go over the list, we have someone who's slaughtering Lishum Horim, and someone who is slaughtering to the angel in charge of mountains, or the Sar Hamemuna is the expression we see in the Meforshim, the minister in charge of mountains, of hills, Nahoros or rivers, the minister in charge of the Midbar, the desert, Lishum Chamo, he slaughters for the purpose of the sun, for as worshipping the sun, the Levana, the moon, stars and constellations, the Michoel Saragodol, the name of, he's slaughtering this an animal in honor of this angel, or the Shum Shilshul Katan, or he's worshipping a little worm. All of these things constitute an idolatrous slaughtering. What do we see from here? We see that all kinds of things beyond the three items enumerated in the Mishnah are worshipped. Omar Abaye. Abaye explains, Niflach lachol demishkechi palchi. Idol worshippers will worship anything they come across. Whatever they decide they want to worship can become a deity to them. However, meitzar u'miflachi, to trouble oneself in making the form of something and then worshipping that which you troubled to make, to form, to sculpture. Hani tlosa, the chashivi. These three items that have importance, tsairi luhu balchilu, they will trouble themselves to tsairi, to form, and then worship. However, lamidi achrina, other forms that one finds, lenoi bi'alma avdilu, they do them, they make those other forms for purely decorative purposes. So we see from here that as far as troubling oneself to make things that are decorative, they'll make lots of things decorative. However, to assume that something was formed for the purpose of worship, it would only be these three items enumerated in the Mishnah. Therefore, if one finds some kind of statue or other kind of form, generally speaking, according to the Rabbanan, take it, you can benefit from it, you are allowed to have hanah from it. However, if you find the form of a sun, a moon, or a dragon form, then one has to suspect that maybe it was something worshipped. And therefore, as the Mishnah said, one should cast it into the Dead Sea. At this point in the Gemara, we have a long question marking. The Gemara that we present here isn't presented initially as a question on something. In fact, we also have written in a slash marking right before this to indicate that this is a new trend of thought. But at the end of the day, what happens is we're going to have a series of sources will be combined into one framed section. They really represent different sources that we put together, that Rav Sheshes puts together, and he claims that the sources are, each one has an inherent problem or difficulty. Each source is considered difficult when taking each source in consideration or in the context of some other sources. As a result of this, we've assigned a long question marking that takes us to the top of Mem Gimel Amud Aleph, third line from the top. The Rashi explains a few lines from the bottom, Mankid Chumri, or maybe we'll just read the line in the Gemara before we look at the Rashi. Mankit Rav Sheshes Chumrei Masnaisa Vitoni. Let's see the Rashi. Mankit Chumrei Malakit Mishnayos HaChamuros. Rav Sheshes collected some Mishnayos that are tough, that are difficult. HaChamuros L'Tartzon. The Omron B'Beis HaMedrash Kedesh Yitnu Libon L'Farkon. He pastes together, so to speak, three Mishnayos that when you view them together, to find some type of consistency in the halacha with regard to these three Mishnayos, we will run into a difficulty. And he presents these together in the Beis Medrash in order for the public in the Beis Medrash to offer their explanation. On the outside margin, we have a Nosei and Mivneh heading, a topic heading with a structural note. You notice the diamond is featured. Birur, clarification of Makoros, of sources, the Inyan Tsuros, regarding forms, images. Im Osur Rak Asiyosim, is
the prohibition concerning only the making of them, oyafilu osur lahachzik bohem, or it's possible even to be in ownership of them. Heora, we have a little note here that we attach to this synopsis. Das Cholo, at the beginning, Rav Sheshis Mitzarif as a Makoros Yachad. As the Gemara begins, he pastes these three sources together. Kol Echad Mesumon with a diamond around the word Kol. The Achakacha Gemara Minatachas Kol Echad, the Shuv Mesumon with the Meuyan with the diamond. As the Gemara goes on, we will be reusing the diamonds to feature each one of these sources and view them on their own. So here we go. We mentioned that Rav Sheshes pasted together three Tanaic sources and taught them as follows. Kol hamazolos mutarin chutz mimazul chama ulevona. All constellations are constellations having a form. This is associated with things that sometimes we call today zodiac, but it's important, of course, at the outset to make a major distinction between the way the Chachomim relate to this issue of mazolos and the way the newspapers relate to the zodiac. But for our purposes, we're going to simply refer to them as mazolos. So all mazolos are mutter, with the exception of mazol chamo levono, with the exception of the mazel of the sun and the moon. The chol ha-partsufin mutarin. Now, of course, the word mutar we're leaving unexplained right now. That's going to be the job of the Gemara. It says all faces are allowed, chutz mi partsuf adam, with the exception of a human face. The chol ha-suros mutaros, and all forms are mutar. All images are mutar, are allowed, chutz mi tsuras drakon, with the exception of the image of a dragon. And now we go over them. Omar Mar. Before we read the Gemara, let's just have our eye scan ahead to see. Does everyone see where the diamonds appear? You have Omar Mar. This is a quote of the Resha. Then a few lines later, you see a diamond around the expression Eimo Mitziosa. That will be a quote of the middle section, the second diamond. And second line from the bottom, you see Eimo Seifa. We will state the last clause of this Tanaic source. What we're looking for is a sense of consistency with whatever we explain, or however we explain the Resha. We would like to be able to explain the Mitziyasa, the middle section, and likewise, however we explain the middle section, we would like to be able to explain the third clause. In general, we like to have consistency in sources. Omar Mar, kol hamazolos mutarin chutz mimazol cham ulevona. All the mazolos are allowed, except for the mazol sun and moon. B'mai askinon. When it says mutar here, what are we talking about? E lema ba'oise. If we're talking about it's mutar to make them, e ba'oise. If it were really talking about making it, kol hamazolos mishari. Are all the different zodiac forms allowed? The Hoksiv, their pasuk says Lo Sasun Iti, which equals Lo Sasun Kidmus Shamoshai Hamishamshin Lefonai Bemorom. The Droshes Chazal, the way the Chazal understand this pasuk of Lo Sasun Iti, this is a pasuk in Parshas Yisro that thou shalt not make. It says Lo Sasun Iti, and that means those things that are, the Iti means with me, those things that are with me, that serve with me in the heavens. So the Torah is prohibiting those images that serve in front of the Almighty in the heavens. That would include all the mazolos. Elapshita b'motze. We have a double underline marking to indicate the conclusion of each one of these sections. So what are we saying then? We have to conclude that the heter, the leniency in the first clause regarding the mazolos, when it says mutter, that they're allowed, it's referring to someone that finds it. So once someone finds an image of some type of zodiac image, then it's mutter. It's not something prohibited to have. Uchidisnan.
Hamotze Kelim Valeim Tsuras Chamo Tsuras Levona Tsuras Drakon Yolichem Liyam HaMelach.
Here it says Motse, we've dashed underline that. One who finds vessels with certain forms on them, one has to get rid of them. Well, which forms are featured over here? They say Chama and Levona. Those are the examples that are important for us right now. Those are mazel related items, things that are associated with different heavenly forms. And which ones are featured as being forbidden, where it says Yolicham Namelach, Chama and Levona? So what in the first clause of the diamonded sources, the first clause that said all mazolos are mutter except for mazol chamo and levona, we see in our Mishnah as well that one who finds mazol chamo and levona items, those and only those have to be taken to the Dead Sea. But otherwise, if one is motzei, one finds other forms, then it's allowed. And that conforms with what we're teaching in this first clause, where the diamonds appear, that all other mazalos are mutter. Continuing in the Gemara, Ibe motzei. If we're to understand Rav Sheshis's collection of sources as talking about a person finding things, Emo mitziosa. Let's state the middle source, the middle quote. Kol ha-partsufois mutoren chutz mi-partsuf adam. All faces, face images, are allowed except for human face. I b'motze, if you're talking about someone finding something, well, partsuf adam mi-osir, the one who finds a human facial form, is that prohibited? Is it prohibited to remain in possession of that? V'hotnan. Ha-motze kelim. Ve'aleim, it's the same sources we just quoted. Ve'aleim, tsuras chama, tsuras levona, tsuras drakon, yoluchim ha-melach. One who finds vessels with these three forms on it, those are the ones that are to be destroyed. Tsuras drakon, in the face or the form of a dragon, that, yes, that has to be destroyed. Parts of Adam lo, but one who finds a parts of Adam, a face of a man, that's not necessary. There's no necessity to destroy that. So the source, the Mitziosa, that spoke about parts of Adam being forbidden, what's it talking about? El Apshita Ba'oisa. The topic of the mutar over there has to do with the making of it. Uchrav Huna Braid Rav Yeshua. And in accordance with Rav Huna Braid Rav Yeshua's teaching, which is seen later in the Gemara, but we can, Rashi cites it, where the pasuk that says Lo Sasun Iti is explained as Lo Sasun O.C. Don't make an image like mine. And we say that man is created in the image of God, and as a result of that, the image of man is specifically is the image that one is forbidden to make. So as we go along, though, what are we noticing in terms of the sources that Rav Sheshis combined? The first clause, we had to conclude, was talking about motze, one who finds it. The second clause, we have to conclude, is talking about making. And that you can see clearly by just noticing the double underlines that we've been marking till now. Let's continue. Iba oisa emo seifa. If we're to understand Rav Sheshis's sources as talking about making emo seifa, let's state the final clause. Kol hatsuros mutoros chutz mitsuros drakon. It says that all forms are allowed except for the form of a dragon. The Iba Oisa, if we're talking about manufacture, Tsuras Drakon Mi Osir, is it forbidden to make the form of a dragon? The Hoksiv, we have a pasuk that says, Lo Yisasun Iti Elohei Chesef Elohei Zov, and the drosha of that, that's a pasuk, and the drosha is Lo Sasun Kidmus Shamoshai Hamishamshin Lefonai Bamorom. We saw this quote above as well, that the Torah prohibits the making of those images that serve in the heavens.
Hani in, the Gemara at the top of Mem Gimel says, these things, yes, these are forbidden, namely, the Shamoshim Bamorom, Tsuras Drakon, lo. But the Tsuras Drakon, a dragon, is not something that serves, it's not one of the heavenly bodies that serve the Almighty. That's not prohibited in terms of the making. Elo Pshita Bamotze. Rather, we're going to have to talk about someone who finds them, and the issue is taking it into possession and keeping it. And when you find a Tsuras Drakon, that is in fact a problem. Uchedisnan, as we have seen in our Mishnah, Hamotzi Kalim, V'aleim Tsuras Chamo, etc. And it said in the continuation of that source, Tsuras Drakon, Yalilichem Yamamelach, that if one finds a dragon form, he has to take it to the Dead Sea for its destruction. Now, as we take accounting of all of the sources and what are they talking about, what comes out? Reisha v'seifa b'motzei. The first and third clauses are talking about motzei. And by all means, take advantage of the markings and see, look at the double underlinings. And how did we conclude the reisha? The first diamonded quote was a double underline, talked about b'motzei. This last one is right over here. We concluded it's talking about motzei, finding it. And so the Gemara says that the reisha of a sefer motzei umitziyasa ba'oise, and the middle clause is talking about making. The mutter there had to do with its mutter to make, with the exception of making a human face. This presents a position of difficulty, if you will. How do we get out of that? Stay tuned for the next shiur. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.